three close friends and I get together every night. Set way in the back, me and Jim, Rose and Jack, where we silently work all my thirst. Jim, Bean, Jack Daniels and sweet Gypsy Rose. My shaky hand, they sit and listen, and I never must insist. Gypsy Rose watches my eyes, and if she thinks I'm about to cry, she caresses my lips with her kiss. Jim, Gypsy Rose, they're always wherever I go. They're the only friends I've got, and I'm proud I got to know Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, and sweet Gypsy Rose.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network. Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio. Liberty Lounge. Every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern. Right here on Survival Circle.
Now, war is coming between light and darkness. Will you bow down to the darkness? Or will you fight?
Yeah.
Welcome to the Shooting Bench. For the next hour, I'll be bringing you commentary and important updates on current events, as well as information on guns, training, preparedness, and other liberty-related issues. Let's get started. RAT, right now. Alrighty, welcome to the Shooting Bench, 27th of July, almost said June there, it's a Wednesday, and don't forget our new schedule coming up here next Monday. Things are going to be quite a bit different. Hey, Radio Doc just joined us, and things will be quite a bit different next week. Starting Monday, we'll have Amy's going to be on, may or may not be a pre-record, but Amy will be on Monday. I will be on Monday, but for 2 hours. That'll be from 8 p.m. Pacific until 10 p.m. Pacific. And Wednesday, be 2 hours, same time frame. Amy will not be on there. Amy won't be on except Mondays until probably September. So don't be looking for too many live shows out of her for a while. And then Friday is our big night, 3 hours. We'll have an hour to catch up on news and things we need to tidy up over the week since we missed a couple of days. And then Liberty Lounge will be on at just normal time. Now, I posted all this on Facebook today, several places. So if you're confused about it, you can go check out if you're a Facebooker. Or you can go to my blog. Go to, not the blog, the podcast site, Podbean. tsb.podbean.com. And when the deal comes up there, click on the thing on the tab that says About TSB. And we put the whole history on there of the Shooting Bench and how the Survival Circle Network came to be and all of that. So there's some interesting stuff right from the very beginning. I've taken the time and typed this whole thing out. So at the end of it is our schedule in Pacific time. So, if you need to catch up, well, that's the place to do it. Let me see what's going on in the chat room here. Hey, Radio Doc, I just thought I'd let you know. I have a box sitting here on my desk addressed to you. And it's going to go out again tomorrow, only with the right address on it. So, you probably might get it now that I've fix the address on it. No, sorry about that. And let's see. Who else we got in the chat room? Kind of slim pickings in the chat room today. Radio Risen's in there. I haven't seen him for a while. Glad you made it. Charlie Brown's getting to be a pretty regular fixture here. We missed him for a long time. But he's back with a vengeance now. And DeTinker and Doc and Minnie and Northwest Heavy. Peanut Rider. One Anonymous. All right, they'll probably start dribbling in here in a little bit. All right, let's, I don't know which direction to go. I guess we'll start right now with a little bit of old new news. This is another deal. It just came out 16th of last month, and it's been tossed back and forth here so many times. But the Supreme Court has a ruling now. Says that the police have no duty to protect the general public. Well, of course, if you're a Shooting Bench listener, you've known that for years, because back about 1995, maybe 97, you can look up the case of Castle Rock versus Gonzales. And they determined at that time, the Supreme Court ruled then, 30 years ago, or what, 30 years ago? Yeah. Yeah, no, 20 years ago. Anyway, whatever it is. Ruled at that time that the police had no obligation. All this to protect and serve stuff is a neat little catchphrase, but they are not legally obligated to protect the public. What they're there for is to take reports, clean up the mess. If they can catch bad guys, great. If they can't, That's okay too, because they're not obligated to do that. So, but they've had a new deal come out, and I don't know why they've done this again. But it says, in light of the recent terror attack in Orlando, many people are asking, what can the government do to protect the people? Well, I'll tell you exactly what the government can do to protect the people. Remove any restrictions from carrying handguns, and concealed or otherwise, and that will cut way, way down on the body count of these terrorist attacks. Some of the bodies included may be the terrorists themselves. But and they're talking about how dumb is this. It says, what can the government do to protect the people? Everything from banning certain types of firearms to prohibiting people on the no-fly list from buying guns to immigration reform has been proposed as possible government solutions. So let's see. Banning certain types of firearms. Okay, well, I'm guessing that the guy that did all the shooting in Orlando probably didn't probably wouldn't have made any difference what gun was banned or whatever. Just could grab something else. We've had people killed with bolt action rifles and hunting rifles and revolvers and everything. What you need to do is make it where the people can carry guns and protect themselves. The government's just not their job. Prohibiting people on the old no-fly list from buying guns. Not unless they're convicted felon. If they're a convicted felon, they should be in jail. If they're out of jail, then they should have served their time, and all that should be lifted, and they should be able to buy a gun. It's the way that should work. Immigration reform, yeah, that's a good one. That works perfectly. Well, anyway, that doesn't seem to be working out too good for them. There was a Detroit police detective, demoted for criticizing Black Lives Matter on Facebook. With all this stuff going on, he went on there. He was a the detective. I was looking at this, said police chief. Launched an investigation into Detective Nathan Weekly after his social media post went viral, drawing over 40,000 views and a number of complaints. The officer's post was highlighted by the left-wing Michigan National Action Network, revealing to liberal supporters of Black Lives Matter that the officer called the BLM movement terrorist and said that the only way that people would understand how important police work was is for police to stop going to work. Well, we talked a little bit about this, how frustrating this is last night. So he called them terrorists, so what? They're calling Lavoie and Ammon and all of them terror, and the Hammonds and everybody terrorists. I surely don't understand this. There's no use going into it again. I mean, you have these people that are tearing stuff up and hurting people and burning things, and they're not terrorists, and a cop gets demoted for mentioning it, yet they turn right around and call all these ranchers domestic terrorists when they ain't hurting nobody, didn't tear nothing up, and set nothing on fire. In fact, cleaned things up, repaired things, and they're terrorists, held in jail. As it appears so far, indefinitely without due process. So that's what's going on in your world right now. Unbelievable. Well, we started last night. Well, and actually we didn't start. We made it through, I think, the third segment of this gear deal here, and we're going to get into that a little bit more here just a little bit later. But there was a man in Ohio that was refused a gun by the FBI. He went in, did his little NICS check, and Went to buy a new gun at a dealer, and he was refused. Couldn't find out, and this guy was pretty adamant. He worked on it. He worked on it hard. Really pestered him, trying to find out why they turned him down. All he would tell him, finally, was that he was a prohibited firearms possessor. Well, under federal law, those found guilty of non-domestic violence and a few other things, punishable by over 2 years in prison, among others, can lose their gun rights. Well, this guy's whole criminal history consisted of a misdemeanor theft under a $100 charge. Misdemeanor theft under $100 charge in 1997 in Louisiana. He got a 6-month suspended sentence in lieu of 18 months probation, which meant that he should not have been denied. Well, this guy kept on, finally hired a lawyer. I mean, this went on as they told him how long, you know, what how far down the line he was, and they said it was going to be well over a year before the case even came up for review. So he'd filed two other appeals before that, and he finally got a lawyer and said, you know, this is the deal. This is they tried contacting the Criminal Justice Information Services, and they said this is the whole story right here. I should not be on this list. So he got this lawyer, and within just 3 weeks, I think it was. No, well, neither was 65 days from the time they filed the suit until the date of the letter. You're looking at 65 days. They got a letter from the FBI after these 65 days, said, take a guess. Well, based on further review and investigation, we have been able to determine that you are eligible to possess or receive a firearm. He was even issued his new Criminal Justice Information Services number, so he could use it in the future and wouldn't have any trouble. So they went from over a year just to hear the case to 2 months based on further review and investigation. You can't tell me that they spent 1 minute reviewing and investigating this. Or they could have done it a long time. What happened was they got a lawyer and they said, okay, well, you're working. We got caught with our hands in a cookie jar now, so just go ahead and send him a letter and let him go and forget it. And that was the end of that. So there you have it. Hard to believe these people operate the way they do and get away with it. Month after month, year after year. And it is sure enough aggravating. Well, on the jackbooted thug list tonight, there was a police chief in Oklahoma arrested for running a meth house and protecting his dope-dealing son. Marietta, Oklahoma, longtime sheriff accused of allowing drug use in his own home for years, was arrested Tuesday after is facing possible removal from office. Well, good for him. That's good. Long, drawn-out story about the investigation and all of that. But what it boils down to is he's a crooked, corrupt, jackbooted thug. And he got caught, and all indications here, he's going to be quite possibly going to jail for it. Works for me. All right. Don't forget Wednesday night, starting next week. On Wednesday, the second hour is going to be devoted to outdoors something. Except fishing. We ain't doing no fishing. But we'll be talking about guns, militia, survival, preparedness, training. You know, what all those kind of deals on the second hour starting next Wednesday. Smith & Wesson just acquired a knife company. I wondered about these Smith & Wesson knives. Turns out they're probably not as junky as I figured that they probably were. The Smith & Wesson knives are made by Taylor. Taylor brand knives made in Tennessee. And Smith & Wesson has purchased this company. So now Smith & Wesson knives really are Smith & Wesson knives because the company that makes them belongs to Smith & Wesson. But all of your Smith & Wesson and your M&P, your knives with Smith & Wesson M&P logos on them are Taylor brand knives made right here in the United States in Tennessee. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Knives are something that we ought to do a show on knives one of these days, but that is an indispensable tool. If I can't imagine carrying no knife any time, any day, for any reason, for any amount of time, anywhere you go, period. I just can't imagine it. But don't have fish in Arizona? Oh, the tinker. Oh, ye of little knowledge. We have some of the greatest trout fishing in the country right here in Arizona. And you step just across the line into New Mexico and don't go down to the Gila Wilderness. And, you can get down there and catch some damn nice brookies and German browns down there. And right here locally, we've got Sholo Lake and quite a number of private lakes and stuff. Yeah, there's good fishing around here. It's a favorite pastime of everybody but me. I just don't do fishing. Anyway, back to the knives. I typically carry, and I think I've told you this before, I typically carry at least three, sometimes four, for different applications. And the one of them is the blade on my Leatherman. So it's a multi-tool. It's not a knife, but it has a good surgically sharp knife blade. I carry a little bitty knife in my pocket, a little jackknife as they call it, a little pocket knife, a little folding three-blade folding pocket knife. Works great for a number of things, and it is also surgically sharp. Great for minor medical operations, deep slivers, splinters, and stuff like that. And if you needed to lay something open to get debris or a bullet or whatever out of there, that little knife will damn sure do it. And then my utility knife, I've got a rather a little bit bigger than medium size Columbia River knife and tool folder that's in my pocket. And usually, I haven't been carrying it lately, but I also carry a K-Bar TDK in my belt where I can reach it in such a manner that I can reach it with either hand, but not real accessible to people that I'm near. So that's I just can't imagine people go through life. I've seen people, you mentioned a pocket knife or something. Oh, I don't have one. What do you mean you don't have one? You're 47 years old. You don't have a damn pocket knife. What are you? What is in the world is the matter with you? How in the world do you get dressed and get out the door and get to your work by yourself in the morning without a pocket knife? I can't even imagine in my wildest nightmares walking out of the house without a pocket knife. Some kind. I bet you I use a knife. I have no idea how many times a day. I use a knife for something. Well, I don't know. Yeah, Doc, I'm waiting for that day to use my box cutter to go and hijack the aircraft carrier. Yep, that ought to be a fun one. And when I get that aircraft carrier, I'm going to get radio, Doc, and we're going to go fly fishing off of it. Yeah. The Rolex, you're probably right, and that's because liberals have trained the young people, and that's probably exactly the case. But anyway, I think that knives are like the knives are like the tools that you get for your garage toolbox or your toolbox in your pickup or whatever. You know, don't buy tools from Taiwan or India or Pakistan and stuff. You'll just buy them over and over and over. There's just not any of them that's worth a damn. Just save a few extra bucks and get something, you know, SK, Proto, Craftsman, something that's a decent quality. And you'll probably only buy them once. Because most of that stuff comes with a good warranty. Much of it with a lifetime warranty. And, you know, it just doesn't make any sense to buy that cheap junk. And knives are the same way. When you buy a knife that's made in Pakistan, I can guarantee you right now, without question, it's junk. You can't sharpen it. If you get anything that vaguely resembles an edge on it of some kind, and then you go and try to cut a piece of paper or whittle a stick or do anything, it just rolls because it's so soft and junky. Throw it away. No, don't put it in a drawer and save it for an extra. Don't put it in a drawer and think you're going to give it to one of your grandkids or something later. I would like to think that you think more of your grandkids than to give them a damn knife made in Pakistan. Throw it in the trash. There are lots of good quality knives out there. Good knives that are extremely reasonably priced. There is no excuse to carry a piece of junk around in your pocket. You might actually need that knife to protect your life with sometime. Save your life in a survival situation. And the Pakistani or the Indian knife is not going to cut it. China, well, if it's a Chinese knife made in China, kind of like scopes, if it's a Chinese knife made in China, then it's probably junk. If it's an American company made in China, it's probably just as good as the ones made here. You know, K-bars now are made in China. And they're I think it's K-bar, no, old-timer made in China. And they're every bit as good as they ever were. They're just as nice looking. They got just as good a finish on them. They're as good as they ever were. I don't like buying them because they're made in China, but that doesn't have anything to do with the price. What would I spend on a good quality knife, Northwest Heavy? Quality knife for what? What style of knife are you looking at? A heavy-duty fixed-blade knife for my gear, a medium-sized fixed-blade knife for hunting, a folder for everyday use? What are you talking about? And I'll let you know what I might spend on it. Rolex naming off a bunch of knives there, all of them. I don't like Buck. You can scratch that one off the list there, Rolex. I don't like Buck at all. They're decent knives. They're good knives, but they're just way too damn hard to sharpen. And once you get them sharp, they stay that way, but sooner or later you're gonna slip and ding something and have to sharpen it again in the field. It just takes too long. So that risk versus reward thing, there's a compromise there somewhere where the blade is relatively, comparatively easy to sharpen and still holds an edge pretty well. And Buck ain't it. But most of the rest of these ones that you've mentioned, yeah, those are all good knives. I do like the Columbia River Knife and Tool. I like them very much. I like the Carson flipper on them, the opening device on them. And they're made in Taiwan, but they're made by an American company. And they work well. I've been using them now for pretty close to 10 years. No, over 10 years. Probably 12 years. 12 or 13 years I've been using Columbia River Knife and Tool. And I've never been unhappy with them. Let's see, a folding front pocket knife. You know, there's a lot of good ones out there. You can get pretty decent ones. You can get a medium sized Columbia River Knife and Tool for about $40. If you get a big one like I've got, they're about $75. That's about the limit that I'd spend on a utility knife like that. 75. I might stretch it out to 100, for one that really appealed to me. But it would have to be quite a knife, because the one that I'm carrying right now really damn appeals to me. So I wouldn't spend a whole lot more than $75-$80 for something like a good fixed blade K-bar for to carry with your gear, with your third line equipment, or maybe your second line also. I would probably go $125-$150, something like that. Yeah, it's kind of like scopes, you know. I'm not going to pay $1,500 for a scope when I can get a damn good scope. It works very well, good warranty, nice and clear, gathers light, waterproof, and all that stuff for less than $200. So if I can get a good quality knife for $150, I'm not paying $500, $600, or $700 for some of these custom knives. I just ain't. Doesn't make sense to me. I don't have. I'm secure in my manhood. I don't need to carry an $800 knife to show you how. I don't care if I did have the money to do it. I just won't. Doesn't make any sense. Yeah, Benchmade. That's a Benchmade is a good knife, Rolex, and they have a policy. If you'll send it back to them, along with $5 for the rest of your life, they will put a good edge. They'll sharpen it up for you. Of course, I think that's kind of ridiculous to send a knife off to somebody and have them sharpen it when you can, if it's decent quality steel, you can sharpen it yourself in, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, even if it's in pretty bad shape. But Anonymous there has a little problem with the K-bars. It fell apart in his pocket. All the screws came out. You know, I've had screws come out of my Columbia River knife and tool one time, and I figured, you know what, this is just like a gun, it's just like a car, it's just like a chainsaw, it's just like anything else. When you use it, the screws are going to get loose and you're going to lose them sooner or later. So what I do when I get a new knife, I just go ahead and take the screws out right then, put a little tiny drop of blue Loctite on it, snug them back up, and there you go. We'll never have that trial problem again. But I have had that happen, and it's aggravating. It's infuriating to me. But, you know, like I said, it happens on any piece of equipment, anything that you actually use. It's wear and tear. It's going to start falling apart at some point. So just take care of your stuff, and you won't have to worry about it too much.
Sangria wine. Whoa, I
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Show, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Alan Jackson trying to horn in there a little bit. You know, have to have a talk with him about that. Doc brought up a good subject, and that's what kind of an edge to put on your knife. And there's, you know, depending on whether you're cutting up meat, cutting a lot of ropes, or, you know, you might get into some light wire or something like that, will kind of dictate how you sharpen your knife. But I, and that's part of the reason why I carry multiple knives, because I have at least one on me all the time that is absolutely surgical sharp. And I mean surgical sharp. I mean you can literally very easily shave with it, and it's razor blade style sharp. And I'm not going to use that for anything else. I'm not going to use it as a utility knife. I'm not going to cut unless it's an emergency of some kind. I have no intention of touching that to a stick to whittle with it or to cut a piece of rope or do anything. Matter of fact, I carry one blade on me that probably has never been used since I've been carrying the knife. And I've been carrying it for probably 2 or 3 years now. And there's two other blades on it that I use fairly frequently. But there's one knife that never, one blade, I'll unfold it, clean it off, check it out once in a while, but it just doesn't get used. And it's not ever going to get used for anything other than for cutting flesh. I mean, it's what I've got it for. And by cutting flesh, I don't mean a fighting style knife. I mean if I need to do some sort of a minor medical procedure of some kind, then that's what that blade's good for. But you know, the other ones you want to knock the chunks out. Usually, most of my blades, you know, depending on, you know, if it's a specialty knife, let's say a fillet knife or a knife that I use specifically for slicing steaks, then I want a relatively thin bladed knife, and I probably want a 15 degree angle on it. But most of what I do is 20 degrees. Almost all of my knives is 20 degrees. I've got a couple of them that I use for meat that are, a little higher angle than that, but the most of them are 20 degrees. It seems to work pretty well for just about everything that I need to do. I've got, like somebody said, I think it was Yakima Glock there, said, it's what I've got my Leatherman for, with the serrated blade if I need to cut heavy rope, wire, something like that, tin cans and whatever, then I'll use that serrated blade. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, that's what it's for. So, anyway. All right, we've got a few minutes left here. I want to go ahead and finish up this gear thing that we've started here a few days ago. And I want to tell everybody once again that these are suggestions. These are to make you think. You can add to it, take away from it, whatever. This is just something that is pretty well covered, I think. But there's going to be some stuff that you're not going to want to carry. Maybe you don't need to, don't want to. Maybe you've got a higher level of skill than the average person, and you don't need those things. On the other hand, maybe you don't have any skill at all and you need as much as you can carry to even survive. So all of these are just suggestions. This would be your third line gear. This is your longer term stuff. 3 to 5 days in the field, you're not coming back. There's no resupply, no replenishing anything. Whatever you have on you is what you have on you. This is your shelter, your water, your food, your survival weapons, ammo, whatever you've got for 3 to 5 days is what you've got in this rucksack. So, obviously, it's going to be a larger rucksack. Your medium-sized Alice pack that was so popular during Vietnam and everything, that's going to be probably too small for this. With the, there's guys out there. I could stay out there 3 to 5 days without with a medium-sized rucksack. Fine. You got to remember, 3 to 5 days, You can stay out there with a pocket full of Twinkies and a bottle of water. You know, if you could go find a cow track, suck some water out of and run it through a filter or something, you can make it. You can survive. But will you be combat effective if you have to do it that way? Probably not. So your rucksack's going to be a little bigger than average. You're going to have a sleeping bag system of some kind with a cover. That may, depending on the weather that you're in, the climate, that may be nothing more than a wool blanket and a ground tarp, you know, a ground sheet. I tell you what works great for a ground sheet that's better than a tarp. They're quiet, they're relatively tough, and that's a shower curtain. Go and get the, you know, people throw these shower curtains away. I don't. Matter of fact, behind me right now in a chair out here on the porch is about 4 shower curtains that I just managed to rescue from somebody that was throwing them away. They're usually 84 to 90, 96 inches long, something like that. No, probably not 96, but they're 72 to 84 inches long, I think, somewhere in there. So they're plenty and wide enough. You know, most of them are, once you stretch them all out, most of them, especially if they're on a bathtub instead of a shower stall, you're looking at 5 feet wide. Plenty wide enough, plenty long enough to put your sleeping bag on and possibly even have your gear and backpack sitting beside you. You can carry, and the thing I like about these is they're quiet. Your tarps are just not quiet. When you roll over or move in your sleep, it makes noise. It makes a lot of noise. So these shower curtains work good. They're cheap. If you forget it, if you have to ditch it or whatever, they would work for making a solar still. They're strong enough to work for making a travois or something out of. So. Yakima Glock, I don't know if that would help or not, but it's nice to know a lot of them do have, shower curtains do have magnets in them. It might not hurt to cut those out and throw them in a pouch somewhere and just hang on to them. Or leave them in the thing, hang on to them that way. But that's a new, well, I won't say new, but it's something that I've been using. I've always used a tarp up until, probably 2 years ago or so. And I got into this shower curtain deal, and I said, this works pretty well. So, all right, let's get back to what we were doing here. Ground tube, space blanket. You know, a space blanket may seem redundant to some of you. You've already got sleeping gear. Maybe your space blanket is probably, that's going to be for emergency stuff, for a casualty that you come across, maybe as a reflecting or signaling device of some kind. Space blankets are noisy. But they fold up so small, they're as big as a deck of cards. It's not a bad idea to have one unless you're really trying to slim down and cover, cut out all the extra weight. You're talking about, 2 ounces and something the size of a deck of cards, so it's not really a big deal. A tent or shelter of some kind, depending on your environment. You may be able to get by with nothing more than a poncho, but if you're going to be out there for 2 or 3 days, you're setting up a little base camp, a little LP somewhere or something, well, you might want something a little more homey. So you can either get these little 1 or 2 man tents, or they're $20 at Walmart, and they're not even that much, I don't think. And they fold up and roll up nice and small, tie them on the bottom of your rucksack, and you have a place to get in and out of the weather and change clothes and fix your meals and stuff. So I was never a fan of the stupid shelter halves that the Army's always done. I always thought that was so ridiculous. I mean, these shelter halves are, there's no bottom in them, so if you're out there in a muddy area, you're just in the mud. They're heavy. You've got to find somebody that you can get along with that wants to set up camp the same time you do, so you can use your 2 shelter halves and put them. I'd rather just go out there and fold my shelter half over me and lay on the damn ground. But, you know, I don't know why these shelter houses probably cost five times more than what these some of these little one-man tent, two-man tents cost. But, anyway, take your pick. An additional 90, 120 rounds of ammunition, depending on where you're going, what your mission is. You want to take a little extra ammo. Rations for 3 days minimum. Again, survival tabs. Guys, take advantage of survival tabs. They're light, extremely compact. You can carry a week's worth in a pint jar. I mean, they're so light and everything. It's just crazy not to have them. If you want to stick a couple of MREs in there, so you got something to chew on and make you feel like you're getting your money's worth, well, go ahead. But the survival tabs will get you by just fine. A little solid or gel fuel stove. Now this is optional, of course, but it might be something, especially in cold weather. You get your little bitty old tent out there, and it's get some trioxane or sterno or something in there. You can warm that tent up to where it's tolerable, even in pretty cold weather. And of course, you can do the same with a big beeswax candle too. And a beeswax candle's got more uses than this stuff does, but. You can warm up your food with it. You can, of course, your MREs come with a heater anyway, most of them. But if you need to, sterilize a knife blade or something before you, cut a hematoma open or something like that, well, that's also a good thing for these things. Your utensils, eating utensils, you may not need those. If you're taking MREs and survival tabs, you're going to have, it never hurts to carry an extra plastic fork or two, but I do carry. It's an East German set, and I say East German. They're probably the East and West German when there was an East and a West. And it all locks together. Knife, fork, and spoon locks together very securely. Stays quiet, doesn't rattle loose. And I carry one of those in my third line gear. In case I have to do something besides survival tabs. But before we move on, the chat room's kind of getting away from me here, so let me pull back over here and see what's going on. There's a lot of discussion. I see a couple things on there about the Democratic National Convention. Unbelievable. Unbelievable. These people are so scared. It just astounds me that they managed to make it from day to day. I just don't know. All right. Nothing going on that needs my immediate attention. So, Radio Doc, I have eaten with my knife, many a time, but I'd prefer not to. If I've got a plastic fork in there, then I'm going to use the plastic fork. But I have used a knife before, for sure. Where are we at? Utensil socks. At least two extra pair. Now, remember, your third line gear includes your first line stuff. So there's one pair of socks in there already. So at least two extra pair of socks. Take care of your feet. They'll take care of you, just like the old saying goes. Remember, in our second line gear, we talked about carrying an extra canteen. Well, now I'm talking about carrying an extra two-quart canteen, one of the military collapsible ones, so when it's done, you can kind of fold it up or flatten it out and put it somewhere. And if you drink that, if you squeeze it gently while you're drinking it, then hold it at that position when you put the lid back on it, it doesn't slosh either. So there's an extra benefit. Your one-quart canteens, if you're in a place noise discipline is a serious thing, then you either drink it all or don't drink any of it. You drink it all or pour out what you don't drink. You cannot afford to have that sloshing back and forth in your canteen while you're in some areas. So a lot of times it's not going to matter, but just be advised that it does make some noise when it's half full, so you need to figure out something to do with that extra water. Actually, what we talked about anyway, that canteen is to be saved for to leave with somebody else or to, help somebody else out. It may not be what you drink out of normally. Typically, I'd like to think that most of us will be drinking out of our out of our Camelback and keep that one-quart canteen for an emergency. In this one, you're going to have your two-quart collapsible. You're going to have water purification of some kind. I'm still a big fan of colloidal silver. That's all I take for purifying water. It's all I've used for since 1998 or 99 is when I started using colloidal silver for purifying water. I don't use anything else. But whatever you use, have something there. A waterproof bag for your extra clothing. Field jacket and warm headgear. That's going to be a seasonal thing, depending on where you're at. An extra camouflage uniform of something that's also seasonal. An extra brown or tan t-shirt. And a pair of drawers, underwear. You know, you want probably at least two pair. At least two t-shirts and two underwear. A small thing of foot powder. Duct tape, either green or brown. Don't get the silver stuff down at Walmart. Get a green or a brown duct tape of some kind. Something subdued a little bit. You don't need a whole big roll of it, but you roll off a few feet on a stick and put it somewhere. Carabiner, again, I don't know that you need an additional carabiner from your second line gear, but I've got it on here anyway. You want to have 30 to 50 feet of something a little heavier than paracord, like a 3/8 nylon rope or something, 2,500 pound mule tape, something like that. If you've got a couple of guys get together, you need to use that to help with a water crossing or something. Paracord ain't going to cut it. So, something a little bit heavier. Personal hygiene stuff, keep that at a minimum, but don't go without it. You wind up, outside of serious wounds, probably some of your biggest health concerns out in the field, on the trail, comes from personal hygiene. Not taking care of your feet, whatever. Sunscreen, again, personal preference. It is, if you were out at Fort Irwin and you're fair-skinned, then you definitely, it's not optional. Weapons cleaning gear doesn't require a whole lot of stuff. Boar snake to get the boar cleaned out good. One of those little Otis kits, pretty compact, got pretty much everything you need in it. But if you don't have one of those, just a boar snake, a rag, and a little bit of lubricant, a cleaner of some kind. Break Free works really well. Militech. What's the one we use? It's made by Muscle Products. FP10. FP10 is my absolute favorite. Gun grease, Tetra. Tetra gun grease is another real good one. Depending on your weapon, you may need liquid instead of a cream or a grease. You may need a little bit of both. But a wire saw, you guys have all seen these little wires, 14, 16 inches long with a steel ring on each end of it. You might need something either for rescue operations, help build shelters, help put together a raft for water crossing, something a little more... something to attack a little bit bigger wood than the saw on your Leatherman's got. An entrenching tool for obvious reasons, latrines, foxholes, and heavy-duty Ziploc bags. This would be if you're making a water crossing, you get caught in a torrential downpour, you may want to put your phone, ain't no maze about it, you want to put your phone or your radio in a Ziploc bag and protect it. Alright, and that's just some idea. Now let's go ahead, we've got time to go over fourth line gear. You know why? Because fourth line gear is everything else. This is your militia box. This is your camp box. This is the gear that's stowed away at camp in the vehicles, your cot, your stove, your solar shower, your camp chair, any extra supplies, extra propane, all this stuff, with the exception of a cot or a camp chair and maybe a cooler, everything should fit in your militia box in one duffel bag. You should be able to put quite a substantial amount of stuff in there, extra batteries, you know, resupply stuff. A little extra ammo, extra batteries, extra little propane cans, stuff like that. All is in your fourth line stuff. This is all stuff that you don't carry with you. It sets at camp or sets in the back of the pickup. Sometimes it even gets left back in the rear, back at the house. So always make sure that all your water containers are filled, even when you're not using them. They don't take up any more room full than they do empty. Batteries, propane bottles, make sure they're checked, replaced if they're low. Magazines topped off. All your clothing and your sleeping gear, as soon as you get home, unpack it, dry it, clean it, pack it back up, and have it ready to go. We have to maintain that Minuteman image. They say, oh, the poop has hit the fan. Meet me over here at Checkpoint Charlie in 1 hour. Oh, hell, I can. I got my stuff all scattered. It's covered up in the garage. Then you're not a Minuteman. Stay home and find some skirts to crawl under, and we'll take care of it. Okay? Jeez, grow up already. Don't show up for an exercise or for an operation or poop hit the fan with empty or half full water containers. Don't show up with dead batteries in your flashlight. Oh, that pisses me off. That will get somebody sent home faster than anything. Don't show up out there half ready. Either be ready or don't come at all. That's the way it works. So. Okay, well, we're out of time, so we'll go through. Got a few more things that we'll go over tomorrow concerning individual gear and stuff outside of your first, second, third, and fourth line gear. So we'll spend some time on that. And I reckon that we'll go ahead and get on out of here, and we'll see you tomorrow night. And I do very much appreciate all of you hanging with me tonight. Good night.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you want to holler, holly-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know. Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Grape wine in a mason jar. Homemade and brought to school.
You've been listening to The Shooting Bench. Tune in Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to midnight Eastern for the most politically incorrect show on talk radio.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you wanna holler, holly-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know. Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. 4-H and FFA. On a field trip to the farm. Me and a friend sneak off behind.
Tune in again on Fridays at the same time for 2 hours of classic country music on Liberty Lounge.
Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Make you wanna holler, holly-ho. Burns your tummy, don't you know. Chug-a-lug, chug-a-lug. Jukebox and sawdust floor.
And catch Living Away Out Here with me, Amy Reynolds, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, for the only good news out there. Trivia, stories, tips, hints, and fun on Living Way Out Here, right here on the Survival Circle Network.
All right, I'm going to put some music on for you because we're having a little bit of trouble getting Auto DJ to take over, so I'll put something on so you won't have any dead air, and when I get everything going, it'll stop abruptly, and we'll get on with our archives. Thanks again for being with me tonight.